All right, here we go. We're back with another weekly Sheep Fan podcast, hosted on our bullshit platform through our big shill mics, beaming out of West Yorkshire and Cambridge.
Cambridgeshire.
Format is simple. We release a minimum of 4 shows a month. Members get full podcast plus downloads. Non-members get part one plus downloads. All new shows are released at sheepfarm.co.uk on a Saturday. So you don't have to email and say you haven't had an email notification, or when are your shows out? Because they're always released on a Saturday. We also put part one on Podomatic that send them out to Spotify, Amazon, Audible and Dapple. Please subscribe to the website for email notifications for all new shows and other information. Join Chris on Instagram, where he's building a band of merry men and women up, I think.
Mm. Yeah. We usually put his doodles on there and a few posted photos and weird shit that I've seen. Yeah.
Thanks for buying supplements. Elf Bunker, remember, use a promo code. If you want to look at Chris's gaping gobs, they're on Etsy. All the links are in the show notes. All the discount codes are in the show notes, etc., etc. Oh, and we've got our Big Shill merch store, which Chris put a new design on of me, him, and Mark. I
think that is the Shill box ticked. Forgotten
merch. Yeah, Shill box so. Tick. Yeah, tick, tick, tick.
It's funny,
tick,
isn't it? It's funny when you think we've talked about this before, but the things that people ask us for, then you do them, and then you get shit for it.
I know. It's a bit like we've got our own private servers. Actually, the website went down on Saturday, not that you'd notice, but the website went down on Saturday after a show we did with Melissa. I released it and it went down, and I spoke to the guys that look after the sort of running the website, the agency, if you like. Shouldn't say that, really. But the design agency.
The Masonic web builders.
Yeah. the doozers, yeah. And they said it was traffic. Apparently we had a high volume of traffic going on.
Oh, really? Is that just a bullshit answer? Just keep
you quiet. No, it came back on. It were like 2 hours it were down, and then it came back on. And that's what happens, because we've got a certain package.
Just reminded me, the other day, we had a power cut. Not a power cut. No. It went off for about a minute, the whole house. Jump. Because I was in my shed.
A surge.
All the lights went off, and my computer reset. Yeah.
Right. A surge. Yeah. It went off. I'm not explaining it to anybody in particular, but anybody who's listening. If the reason why we did this in 2021, people wanted to donate, and I wouldn't take anything for free off people. So we said, I'll tell you what, we do, I don't know how many shows we're doing in a couple of months. Let's do two extra. So we'll split it into 4 weeks, and we'll do 8 hours a month. And we'll have the second part for members, which is what some of the podcasts that we listen to in America do.
High side chats do that.
Yeah, so they get people who don't want to be a member, get the first 4 hours. People who want to, I'll use the word donate, and be a member, can do. And then we start getting shit because it's behind a paywall.
But we made it northern cheap, £2.
Quid, yeah.
£2 a month.
My dad used to say £6, we're a pooly octopus. You know, when he used to go into the shop, people used to say, how much is that? He went, pull the octopus. And they used to look at him like, I'm mad. He went, £6.
Oh, God. That's a dad joke, isn't it?
Market stall banter, wasn't it? But then there were another reason why we did this as well, when we put it on private servers, because we thought that we were going to get everything, we were going to go down, we weren't going to be able to do anything. So we thought we'd put it on. In fact, I think it was Clive De Carle that really.
Yeah, it was. I'll
start from the beginning. The reason we went on this private server, it's the same one that Richard used, Richard D. Hall, and he gave me the information of the company's contact. Thank you, Richard. Yeah. Back in 2020, before we started this. So we're always going to do a private server because I wanted to do it on his own. I didn't want to rely on YouTube or anybody else. But then what Clive said is, if it's a private members club, then
shit goes down.
Exactly. You're a private members club and people have come in through choice, not because it's open there.
That's how they're getting these, social media sites, isn't it? Saying anyone can just find it.
Yes. Yeah. Whereas anybody can't find it. You've got to specifically join.
You've got to join, yeah.
But yeah, anyway, yeah. So I don't know why we're talking about that, because nobody's actually emailed in and said, oh, probably because... but it does start its own silly little, I call it trade wars, where people who have probably started listening to what we do after 2 or 3 years don't know that actual story. So they look at it like a paywall, and you just want to rip people off and earn money out of it. Well, I won't be retiring anytime soon on that.
No. But you got to pay for the website, haven't you?
Yeah, but some people want to help, some don't, and that's fine either way. I don't really care. I'll still be doing it anyway. We'll introduce the guest, because generally rabbit on 20 minutes have gone by and
I'm making an effort to keep quiet.
Yeah, good. One off, younger brother, staying quiet for once. First time in about 50 years. A couple of returning. It wouldn't matter if I told you to shut the F up. We just carry on talking anyway. To shut the F up. We just go around in circles, wouldn't we? We've got two returning guests coming on together, actually. Jerry Marzinski and Sherry Sweeney, who we had on. And they wrote a book together, and we're going to discuss probably that and some other stuff that we had. I've forgotten the name of the bloody book now.
I've got it here.
It's all unorganised. It's within
an amazing
orangutan arm reach of for Christian there.
Shut up a minute. An amazing journey into the psychotic mind, breaking the spell of the ivory tower. Jerry Marzinski and Sherry Sweeney.
It's not Marzinski. You mix him up with that racehorse, Marzinski.
Marzinski. Yeah. Marzinski. Yeah, I know. Those are the names of racehorses.
No, you know that one, obviously. Jerry Marzinski.
It's a good book. I'm going to reread this, actually.
Yeah, it's a very
I really
good
enjoyed
book.
It when I read it. Yeah.
Frightening.
It's like a thriller, isn't it?
But yeah, it is.
I remember that bit. Swedenborg, isn't it?
Yeah,
Dr.
Swedenborg. But, I mean, Jerry's story is it's just amazing. It resonated with me in so many different ways, the Jerry's story.
I'm sure people have come across him now, whether it's through us or other places, but you can always go to the Sheep Fan website. It's right at the beginning. It's one of the first ones we did, isn't it?
Yeah. Sheep Fan website.
It's on the Sheep Fan.
YouTube, you mean?
No, it's on the Sheep Fan website.
All right, they'd have to scroll right down to the bottom.
That's what you said. If you look at the beginning.
How long did it take him to do that? We're going to have to... Do you know, this is another thing we're going to have to do.
I did it over there.
Did you? Search bar. Yeah, but Chris, you're not a lazy bastard.
I'm saying anyone who hasn't listened to the Jerry Marzinski one, if you go to the website, scroll right down to the bottom, takes ages.
Yeah.
It's one of the early first 10 shows. It's there. They're all there. Because I was looking the other day. I don't know what I was looking at. I was looking at the drawings we'd done over the period of time. Yeah, seeing if we'd missed any.
Right, well, let's go anyway, because we're already on 7 minutes and this is going to be short. So we were laughing on Saturday when we said we're going to keep it short, and it was 20 minutes one before we Melissa. So, yeah, this is pretty short. All right, then, I hope you enjoy this podcast. If you can join us on part 2, we'll see you there. If not,
but.
All right, welcome back to this Sheep Fan podcast. This is episode 230. My hair might grow back. I've been doing these that long now. I doubt that. My eyebrows. Today we've got some returning guests who are on together. For the first time, we've managed to get them a slot in the diary and get them on together, which is fantastic news. I think Jerry's been on several times with guests and on his own as well. And we did a live show a couple of years ago. And Sherry was on probably a couple of years ago now, isn't it, Sherry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Well, we've got Jerry Marzinski and Sherry Sweeney back with us, authors of An Amazing Journey into the Psychotic Mind, Breaking the Spell of the Ivory Tower. When was that book actually written, Jerry?
When did we finally finish that thing? It took us 2 years.
Right.
To get that thing done.
Yeah. I'd have to look at the date, but it's been a couple of years that it's been out.
2019.
Yeah.
2019.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
just before the plague,
the just before the nonsense. Yeah,
just before the plague.
Who'd have thought you'd been writing about a possession, and then everyone were banging pots and pans on the doorsteps?
Really, really, that's amazing.
Well, the way that came about was, I'd known Sherry for, I think, over 10 years. We were working on prison reform together. So I was working in the prison and she was attacking the Alabama state prison system. She was on that. And I was like, advises them, or if you say this, this is what they're going to, how they're going to react, watch out for this, kind of. So I was on the inside. I couldn't tech my prison system because it got me. So the Alabama system was really in worse shape. And one day, what I was doing while, while we were doing that, I was studying the voices that schizophrenics heard. And I was finding out all this strange stuff. And one day I brought it up with Sherry, and she said, "Oh, I know all about the voices." And I'm like, "What do you mean you know all about the voices?" Because she was one of the most spiritual people I'd ever met. I mean, she's just like almost an angel, And I'm like, "Well, how do you know anything about the voices?" And she goes, "Well, I used to hear them," and I was just shocked. So I found that hard to believe after 10 years. She just mentions it. So that tells you something about the stigma of schizophrenia. So I didn't
Well,
believe it. I didn't believe it. So I started hammering her with questions that only somebody who heard the voices would know the right answers to. Bam, 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 one after another. Bam, 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 right after she had the answers. So it blew me away. But she's got a story previous to that about how all this came about with her. And when we got to talking after a while, we go, "We got to let the world know about this." And we both agreed we got to do something. We got to let the world know. So we started writing this book, and it was like an agonizing 2 years to get this little thing done. We spent a lot of time on it. But you might want to start with Sherry's story about how the voices came about with her.
yeah, let's definitely trip onto Sherry's story, if you
And
don't
then
mind
we
talking
can,
about what that is.
yeah, then we
You
can
know what?
go on from there.
I don't mind talking about it. I'll keep it short because, this is my entire life. So, I've been on the planet for 80 years, and so I think that, I have to keep it short.
I don't believe you're 80-year-old. I just don't believe
Yeah,
that.
I turned 80 in September. Wow.
Massive energy coming out of this
Oh,
this Zoom
she
call.
does. She does. Yeah. Yeah. Well, once I got rid of the voices, then I got all my energy back eventually. And so, and then I there was a spark of light in me that I didn't see for a long time until I got rid of those things. Which is something I want everybody to know. But anyway, so my story, I came from a broken family and lots of abuse going on. And so that seems to be typical of Jerry's patients. A lot of people who are talking about the voices, they can do that because there's like a door opening that you're being abused, or you're being sexually abused, or spiritually abused, or physically abused, or mentally abused, whatever the abuse is, it opens up a door for these entities to enter. Now, I need to be clear, I never heard audible voices. What I had was intrusive thoughts. And that's what they sound like. When they get
Yeah.
stronger, they
They
move
sound just
outside of
like
the
my
head.
own. Yeah, they sound
Yes.
like just my
Can I
own.
just interject? I know I mentioned this before to you guys. I've got Lyme disease, and for nearly 10 years, I had intrusive voices. Hence why I was tuned into what Jerry was saying when I saw him in an interview once. And it's a pretty horrendous thing. Anybody who's got these attachments really needs to do some cleansing, because they can be got rid of, by the way, as Sherry's going to explain now. Sorry, Sherry.
Yeah,
No,
and they
that's
do. That's okay. Go ahead, Jerry. yeah, most of the time they sound just like your regular thoughts. I asked for them on purpose once so I could experience what they were like, and I got them. Okay, I had them for one night. They tried to kill me. But what surprised me was that they sounded just like the thousands of other thoughts I have going through my mind. I mean, there was
Yes.
no difference. It wasn't like, "Where are the voices?" They sounded just like all the other thoughts, but the intent was very different. It was very dark. It was something that I normally wouldn't think.
I remember saying to Chris, can you tell the story what I said, Chris, about don't you have all this noise in your head?
Yeah, you were asking me, do you hear it when you've just got that constant noise in your head? And I said, I don't know what you mean. And obviously, everyone gets voices, you know, their own voice or whatever. And he was saying, he would explain to me how he once made him stop. And I said, I've never had it like that. I don't know what, I didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah, that was about 10 years ago, I think, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it worked till we spoke to you that we kind of put two and two together. Yeah. That maybe he was getting some kind of parasitical voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't want you to know that they're what they're putting in your mind is any different from your thought processes. Mm-hmm. I've had several prisoners ask them, "Who are you? What are you?" And they would respond, "We are you."
Yeah. I mean, sorry, Sherry, I took
okay.
us on a
Go
different
ahead.
train
Go
there.
ahead.
No, it's all right. You carry on, please. Took us onto a different train of thought there.
No, that's good, because what I was going to say in as a result of this conversation is you'd be surprised how many people either have intrusive thoughts or hear these voices and think that they are theirs. So
Right.
That's one of our missions, is to, you know, let people know that no, these are not your voices. These are not your thoughts. They don't belong to you. They never did belong to you.
You
They
even
have
get
no power over you.
You even get well, I did at the time. Not just voices, feelings. They even interject some kind of feeling that
they can do that.
Yeah,
they can do that. They can. I remember they did that to me once. I'm sitting out on the front porch feeling fine. All of a sudden, I got this heavy feeling of depression just came over me out of nowhere, and there was no reason for it.
Yeah.
So they can do that. These things, everybody is hit by these things. Nobody gets away. I mean, everybody is hit. They're always probing. They're always picking. And just like you said, they're intrusive thoughts. They just barge into your head, and there's something nasty that you normally wouldn't think on your own.
Yes.
And you can feel that they're not you, but they're very upsetting.
And
that's
you
what
know
they've
that was my saving grace, Jerry. I knew they weren't me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't want you to know that. They want you to think that every thought that comes into your mind belongs to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then they insert these thoughts into your thought stream, and they kind of start trying to take you over that way. And lots of schizophrenics fight with that. I mean, you know, they don't know what they are. It's like they think it might be them, it might not be them. And here's the psychiatric mafia comes in and goes, "Oh yeah, your brain is broken. It's you. Something's wrong with you. All you can do is take these toxic meds that we have for you. Expensive toxic meds. There's
No,
nothing else you can do."
last time we spoke to you guys, we did get a lot of positive feedback of people making people who were hearing voice, making them realize that it wasn't them. I can't remember them in
Yes.
detail, but we got quite a lot of comments saying that, "Oh, thank God for this," you know.
Yeah, you have to.
Remember.
They have to realize it's not them. Otherwise, they think they're fighting themselves, and you can't fight yourself.
It's like an autoimmune disease of the mind.
Yes,
yes. That's what they convince you it is. Where you're actually wanting to destroy yourself. It's a strange feeling. I know. Sorry, Sherry.
That's
the,
okay.
the men the men have taken over.
That's okay.
Tell us to shut up.
Hey, so the thing that the people that are telling the patients, "Your brain is broken, you need to take these drugs," they're the gatekeepers. Okay. They're working for those guys, whether they know it or not. They're really working for those guys. They have no sense of other presence, because they think about the body as a mechanical thing. It's just a bunch of chemicals and electrical impulses, and you know, there's nothing. It's really kind of a machine. That's the way they look at us. And until they start looking at us as spiritual beings, and then realize our visual spectrum, our physical visual spectrum, is so tiny. I mean, like it's 99.99999% is invisible, right? So the amount of physical stuff that we're dealing with, which seems like everything, right? But that's not true. So if they could see that much, they would change their minds. It might take them a little bit, because I know how Jerry went through to realize that these really are entities. They really
yeah.
are.
Yeah, they brainwash you. You know, I came out of graduate school going, "Oh yeah, this is a chemical brain imbalance, and these medicines somehow fix it." And then I'm watching the psychiatrist at this big state hospital I worked at for 7 years, and If what I saw them do is they bring the patient in, they go, "Are you hearing voices?" And the guy says, "Yeah." And they just go, "Okay, we're going to start you on this medicine." And that happened over and over and over again. I'm going, "Where's the baseline? Okay, if there's a chemical brain imbalance, where's the tests that tell us what's out of balance or by how much?"
They used to say it's the serotonin levels, or I mean, even when
It's
I
a
were a kid growing up,
serotonin. It's a bull crap. It's all bull crap. They made it up. So there was no test.
Haven't
No
they actually
test
had?
ever existed.
Haven't they
They don't
actually
even
had? It's
know. They don't
madness, isn't
even
it?
know what the chemical balance of the brain should be. It was a lie that they perpetuated on the entire planet, and it came from Eli Lilly, a drug company, back in the 70s when they came out with Prozac. They go, "Oh, well, our drugs affect the brain because they do something to the serotonin, or it's a serotonin up reuptake blocker. So it must be a chemical imbalance thing." They had no valid research on that at all. They just made it up. And then the drug companies picked up on that and they spread it to all mental illness, saying, "Oh, all mental illness is a chemical brain imbalance. And the only thing you can do is take our toxic, expensive meds to fix it." Psychiatric drugs don't cure anything. All they're doing is treating symptoms, temporarily
I have a
treating
friend,
symptoms.
Jarrett, who I work with. I'm sure he won't mind me telling. I think I've told this story on him before. But he got labelled with ADHD or one of those kind of, illnesses, which I think are an addition, aren't they? It's like a new addition to the schizophrenic one. But he said he was given prescribed drugs from like 13 years old, and it totally screwed him up. And it wasn't until he was 18 that he was allowed to say, he kept saying to the doctor, "They're making me feel bad," and they kept just changing the dosage, changing the drug. And he said to me a while ago, he's 18, 19 now. It was only when he got to a certain age that he was allowed to stop taking them, because then he was in charge of his own self. And he said he felt much better as soon as he stopped taking them. And he said to me, which I thought was quite sad, he said, "Imagine who it would have been if I wouldn't have been taking them drugs for five or 6 years, I suppose." I mean, which is horrible, isn't it, for a young lad to. But Chris, imagine if they went in there and said, "This isn't you. This is an attachment." Imagine what would the treatment be if you actually went to see someone, a doctor, a mainstream doctor, and they said, "You don't need any drugs. It's an attachment. It's not actually you." He wasn't schizophrenic, but I think it's like almost that story was started in the 70s, and it's just almost like a bleed off of it, isn't it? It's a different version of the same thing. I mean, I don't think he heard voices and things, fine, but they diagnosed me with something they didn't need to diagnose him with, basically.
But another thing that's hidden that they don't tell you about is that those psychotropic drugs actually shrink your brain. They do damage to the central and peripheral nervous system. They found that out with state hospital patients when they were doing autopsies. All their brains were shrunk. And
Oh, God.
when the researchers published that, Big Pharma and the psychiatric mafia went nuts. They go, "Oh no, it's not our drugs. It's the schizophrenia doing that." So the researchers went back, and I don't know how they got an article published, because the friggin' psychiatric mafia controls the universities. They control the research. They control the medical schools. I don't know how they got the truth out past that, but they did. So when they were confronted with that, they went, "Okay, we'll feed these drugs to rats, mice, and monkeys and see what happens." And their brains shrunk also. I've never seen ever in the 40 years I've been working with psychiatrists, ever seen one of them explain to a patient that the long-term effects of these drugs are permanent neurological damage. They just don't mention it. Maybe they don't even know. I don't know. But they never talk about it. And what I've watched is when those neurological symptoms start flaring up, they don't back off the drugs. What they did at the state hospital is they dosed the guy down with Cogentin so he could no longer feel those side effects while the brain was still being rotted out. They were more concerned with the control of the institution than they were the neurological
You could
damage they were
actually
doing.
say, Jerry, that and Sherry, that was part of some kind of huge experiment that they were monitoring the effects of.
Well, I think they're experimenting on us all, because a lot of those drugs, at least here in the US, they weren't approved. They're just giving them to the population and watching what's going on.
I would say there's some kind of electromagnetic abuse as well with a lot of the technologies that's happening. I think some people, I know when I got ill, we'd moved into an office and above us were two or three cell sites above us. And a few people, when I think back, went ill, not necessarily mentally, but other types of illnesses as well, slowly wearing people down to the point where they go to a doctor, the doctor gives them some kind of drug that then sends them into a system like where you work, Jerry.
Yeah.
But anyway.
That is what they're doing for sure. They're doing it on all levels, every single level. You know, it's like those of us who want to get away from that system. I mean, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do. You can back away. You can grow your own food. You can try to get healthy. And then there's all these other things that are trying to make you sick.
Yes.
Coming from the air, coming from the
clouds.
Clouds, everything. So now, in my opinion, this is all a result of these entities screwing with the individuals who are doing the work.
Yeah.
Because this is not something that normal human beings would do to each other. No. It isn't. It just wouldn't happen. So yeah. That's my take on that. That, you know, this is a big, huge picture. And we need to get into the weeds and get into the details so that we know what to do, you know, on a small scale. But we need to keep the big picture in mind of where they're trying to take us. We can't.
Yeah, I remember when I was at the state hospital, I got to the point where I couldn't get a straight answer as to what the voices were, and nobody else was interested in what they were. Okay, except maybe some of the patients.
Which is quite a phenomenon, really, when you think about how many thousands or millions of patients go in and out of these institutions around the world, and nobody's actually asked what the voices are saying.
Yeah, it's the major symptom of paranoid schizophrenia, and they've done no research on it whatsoever. It's like the ancient Egyptian priests of old. They just get out there and go, "We are the psychiatrists. We hereby pronounce that the voices are hallucinations because we said so." They've done no research on it whatsoever. Okay.
Those days are fading, though, Jerry. I'm seeing that coming on a sliding scale. I'm seeing that, okay, so now we have some doctors who are finally starting to look at this stuff and see.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen that.
Well, yes. We mentioned a couple of them in our book. But
yeah, certainly a lot of alternative people are, aren't there, as well?
Yeah, there are a lot of alternative people out there. And one of our good friends, Michelle, is one of those.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, and then there's a bunch of other people like I can name a few, but I don't have their permission. So, but I'm thinking that these are people who are stepping into what they refer to as the woo or the esoteric or any of those kinds of names, because there's no definition, scientific definition to describe adequately what they're looking at. So, but there are people who are studying it, they're investigating it, and I think things are going to change, not today, but not next week, but pretty soon. And I think a lot of it is to do with Jerry's work.
Mm. Yeah, these things do run patterns. They run stable, repeatable patterns. And if they're running patterns, they can't be hallucinations. Hallucinations don't run patterns. They're all over the place. And the psychiatric mafia is printing, is teaching in the universities, is writing research articles saying that these voices are hallucinations. Bullcrap. They're not hallucinations. Hallucinations don't run patterns.
And hallucinations don't make crackling walls, and hallucinations don't build up smoke clouds and try to prevent me from doing something and then try to prevent Jerry from doing something. Those are not hallucinations.
No.
I remember George, who we had on, was it George, Jerry, your friend?
George Jagatek.
Oh, yeah, George, yeah.
He said he had a suspicion. He thought it was some kind of technology, because I remember him saying when he walked away from his house, it got quieter, and when he came back, I don't think he said he knew it was technology, but he said it felt like some kind of technology. When he came back, it got louder and louder. And when he went away, it got quieter. We didn't finish your story, Sherry.
Yeah, sure.
We do have technology. The military has technology to do voice in the head.
Yeah, voice to skull. To skull stuff,
what do they call it? The voice of God or something like that?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and so they have that technology, and a lot of people in our hearing voices group are claiming to that's what they're hearing.
Yes, I've heard a lot of that too.
I can't disprove it, but I know that the technology exists, so it's possible that they are being affected. I've read
That
horror
doesn't,
stories.
sorry, that doesn't answer the people that were doing it, getting these voices in the head 100 years ago, does it? Or 200
No,
years?
it does. It doesn't at all. No, it doesn't at all. This is new technology, relatively new, like a year or two, a couple of years old maybe. But I saw a story. It was a horror story, a horrible story, of a woman. This man was reporting on his mother, who heard voices, and she was like, thought she was going crazy, and it turned out she had been a targeted individual for no particular reason. Just let's see what happens when we do this with this individual, right? That's what they do. They look at us like, I don't know,
Cattle.
I don't know, like we're not alive, we're not anything, but that's the way they look at us
So,
before.
Sherry, how did you ever figure out that these things weren't you?
I
Because that's one
just
of the
knew
biggest
that.
struggles that people have is trying to differentiate whether it's them or it's something else, or their mind is broken, which is what psychiatry is telling them. How did you
Well,
figure out
see, okay,
these
I
aren't
knew
you?
how I thought. I knew how I felt about things. And so when these intrusive voices were telling me to do XYZ, I knew that that was contrary to who I am. And even as a small child, even though I was getting beaten up and abused and tortured and stuff like that, I still knew. I couldn't articulate it, but I had this feeling that this isn't right. I mean, this isn't, I didn't have a this isn't right kind of ambiance, because I didn't know to explain it then because I was too little. But somehow I knew that these were not me. Okay, this was
That
some
came out
sort of
with
treatment.
your story about the child in the bath when you were in the Catholic school.
Yeah, and that was that put that brought it to a head for me,
Yeah,
because
tell them about that one.
oh, I didn't tell that story. Yeah, I was, among other things, I was put in an orphanage, and it was a Catholic orphanage. So I think I was 6 and a half years old when I arrived, or just about to turn 7. No, I was like I had just turned 7. Anyway, it's in that 6 and a half to 7 year old range. So the first thing that they did to us after they got us all signed in was assign us to an age group of people, where this is our group, and this is our clan, and this is where we stay until we graduate to the next clan. So it's kind of like the Girl Scouts. So this was an orphanage that held 500 girls from age infant to 18. So they had to split everybody up by groups. So I was placed in the blue band group, and then from there I was assigned this to bathe the little ones, the baby group. I think they called them pixies.
And you were hearing these voices at the time.
Well, yeah, I was hearing them, and I wasn't hearing voices, Jerry. I'm having these intrusive
Okay,
thoughts.
you're hearing the
Okay.
intrusive thoughts.
Yeah, I'm feeling the intrusive thoughts. So, and I'm sorry, but I need to make that differentiation, because it's a huge one that people don't understand. And if they're getting intrusive thoughts, feelings that they didn't originate, at least they'll know what that is. And if they're hearing voices, well, then they know what that is. But if the other one is pretty subtle. So anyway, so I was assigned to bathe this little girl, and I think she was 2 or 3 years old. And I had just come from this horrible situation, thinking I was coming into heaven, right? Because when I drove up the driveway to the place, it was a beautiful place, beautiful Catholic orphanage with stuff growing, gardens and stuff. It's so beautiful outside. And it was very ornate inside, very clean. And anyway, so coming into that made me wonder, oh, is this heaven? Because coming where I came from, it's like that was hell. At any rate, so I was getting ready to put her in the bathtub, and I just turned the hot water on and let it fill up that way. And then I was going to add some more cold water to get it to the right temperature, which is how I had learned how to do it. So when it was all hot water, the thoughts came into my mind, oh, just put her in. Just put her in. She'll be okay. Just do it. Just do it. Just like what? So I know I'm not going to do that. Well, then all of a sudden, I'm like kind of picking her up, and I'm like, what the hell? You know, it's like, I don't have control over this. And so I started to dunk her down, and her foot went into the water, and she let out a scream, and I pulled her out and I grabbed her and I started crying, and she started crying, and it was like, that was a big eye opener for me, that I could have been to the point of where I was going to do things involuntarily.
Yeah, and once you cross that line,
Yeah,
there was
once you
no going
cross
back.
and you're
You're
done.
done. You're toast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was not going to do that. I didn't know that that's what I was doing, but that was what I was doing. I was not crossing that
It,
line.
it's like the going back to the voice. I never had the voices. The intrusive thoughts are the voices knocking on the door, if you like. That's what it felt like. There was a bigger thing trying to get at you, behind the scenes, and the intrusive thoughts were like daring you, not necessarily telling you. But daring you to do stuff.
Oh,
I'd
sure,
have
because I'm saying, just
that'd have
saying, do it, do
destroyed.
it, do it, you know, just do it, just do
Yeah,
it, right? And now in
that's
today's news, you hear just do it, and I'm like,
yeah,
what?
the Nike
Yeah,
advert. Yeah.
what? They do it with patients who commit suicide. You know, just do it, just do it, just get it over with. You're no good, you're worthless, you're stupid, nobody likes you. Just do it, just kill yourself. Same thing. Sherry, tell them about the thing where they were telling you, just let go. Just let go and fall on the other side of the fence. They'll
Oh,
feed
yeah.
you. You'll,
I
you
had
know,
so
they'll
many
take care of you.
temptations. I had so many temptations.
Tell them that story.
This particular one, it's like when you're in that world and you're being pulled by this world and you don't want to go there, you want to fight it, you know, but it's like getting so tiresome because you just, you know, no matter what you do, you just kind of keep losing and you just kind of keep falling. And so it was like, I was at one of those points, and I kept hearing, you know, it'd be so much easier if you just go over to this side of the fence and you'll get taken care of. Don't worry about anything. You know, you don't have to think, you don't have to do anything. Just, you know, this would be nice. And then if you don't, you're going to have a hard time. You're going to fight. You're going to this, all this bad stuff's going to happen. And I'm like, no, I am not going to do that. I am not going to do that. I don't care. I don't care. I don't want somebody running my life. I don't want somebody doing everything for me, which is probably why I'm by myself right now, because that was kind of a strong, you know, determined thing that I was doing, because I thought that if I did that, I would lose my soul. And I didn't, I wasn't going to do that. I had been put in that losing my soul situation many times in this lifetime. It's amazing. So I finally got to this final point where, okay, so I didn't fall over the fence. That was one thing. And then later on in life, I came across another situation where if I didn't walk away, I was going to lose my soul. And I wasn't going to do that. That was the last time that happened to me. That was the very last temptation. So something happened in me when I did that, because it meant walking away from some property that I owned that I was going to build into a homestead. And it was like a really it was like 20 acres, and we were starting to do stuff on there, and the conditions were such that, okay, I either had to, I've never said this on the air before, so I either had to become a second or third or fourth or fifth wife, because the idea of just wanting to be the only wife was very selfish. And when I heard that, I said, okay, I'm not going to do that. So my choices are, I can fight this and then probably lose my dignity and lose my land anyway, and lose my riches, my fortune, or whatever it was like that. But so I'm just going to walk away. I said goodbye to my animals. That was the hard part, because I used to love walking in the forest and getting to know the forest. And so I walked away, and that was when I had that big leap of faith, Jerry, that I told you about, that you didn't understand for such a long time.
Yeah, we're
Yeah, when I
It was like, okay, I'm gonna make the leap,
Yeah.
I don't like where this is going. I don't know where it's gonna go if I leap, but if I, I'm not happy with the way things are going.
Right. So that was the final thing for me to break free completely.
I think some people call that a crossroads of your life.
Yeah, right. That's what it was.
Major.
Looking back, that was one of those dark nights of the soul that you have to go through to break free. You
Now,
know?
Sherry came up with a program that it actually works. If the
Mm-hmm.
person uses it, a lot of times it will weaken the voices and in some cases get rid of them. But it's free. We have it on our website at jerrymarzinski.com under articles. She calls it the That's a Lie program. Sherry, would you talk about how you came up with that? Because these voices are consummate liars. They lie about everything constantly.
Yeah, the thing is, it's something I developed during that whole last awakening period, because I realized that I'm born here, I'm made with love, so I must be love. I'm not, I'm not this thing that they keep telling me I am. And I'm sure everybody goes through that. It's just that for me, I had no idea. I didn't know to think about that stuff.
I
So,
don't think any of us do at times, though. I mean, you got to a strong point where you could actually say that to yourself.
right. So I did that, and then, and what was the question, Jerry?
Was how did you come up with that? That's
Oh,
a lie
that's a lie
program. So
program.
this thing does work. I mean, it
It
works
does.
to weaken the voices, because if you don't believe the voices, they can't hook you.
Yeah,
You
so when
have
I
to
realized,
believe their bullcrap.
yeah, so when I realized that everything I had been told as a child was a lie, I thought, okay, I was in the engineering field, and so I had access to computers and stuff like that, and I got to thinking, okay, so is there some way? And I had done a lot of reading on the brain and stuff like that, and so I kind of knew that, okay, the brain works like a computer. And so this was way before computers were in every home. This was like at work. So, but anyway, so I'm dating myself, but so but that's okay. So anyway, as I was thinking about this, I wonder if I could reprogram my own brain to to not accept these lies. And so that was kind of what I had in mind. And then I went to work, and my boss called me in, and he said, "Hey, we got a contract for that's going to require a computer programmer. So would you be interested in learning how to do computer programming?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, that sounds like a good idea." There was synchronicity right there. The universe was saying, "Here, you want to know? Here."
Do you know what word I just wrote down there?
What?
Synchronicity.
Yeah. Yeah.
we,
So the
we've we've
universe
actually
does.
been we've actually been running shows on synchronicity, haven't we, Chris? Because Chris gets a lot of synchronicities. You get
That's,
so like overwhelmed with them.
yeah,
And I
that's
actually
great.
we've actually been talking and saying that there seem to be like the I won't call them a positive, but another side of this phenomenon that Jerry studied while he was working in the psych ward, because they're like meaningless, seem meaningless things to us. Like you're thinking something and then someone rings you. Today I was talking to my son and I said I haven't heard from such and such for a while. He rang me within like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
These things happen for real. Chris gets bombarded by them. Like I were hearing thoughts, he gets bombarded by synchronicities.
That's good.
Yeah, I think these are particular times where more and more people are seeing this as they're becoming more open to reality, I guess. I'm hearing all kinds of different things about reality, but the thing is, Jerry's work is doing such a valuable thing, because there are so many people who are dead sound asleep. They have no idea that they're being attacked by an invisible force, because just to hear that from their perspective makes me look
Scary.
sound like a crazy person, right? But I'm not. I mean, I you know well yeah you're, well if you're crazy you're going to say you're not, right? So whatever.
If
Think
there's
of
a dark
yourself.
negative side that, like, you and Jerry talk about, there's got to be a positive side, aren't there?
Yes,
Maybe
absolutely.
the
Absolutely.
revealing that Jerry and you were doing, about this stuff. Because, I mean, when I heard you guys first talk about it, it blew my mind, because it was something you almost instinctively knew was true as well. It wasn't like, it was shocking, but it was surprising as well. But you kind of, I don't know,
Well,
even if you've never
it
experienced it, you
resonated,
sort of,
yeah.
it resonated
But
with you. And the thing, like, we were talking about synchronicities and more people seeing these synchronicities, maybe that's a positive effect. Or it does feel like to me that when you have these syncs, it's like it's the universe telling you something's in place and something's working rather than it being negative, if you know what I mean.
I think that's true. I think that's what's going on. It's like, okay, it was no accident that Jerry and I even met. I was in the prison reform business, minding my own business, working real hard to help, people who ended up going through the courts being innocent, provably innocent, and getting stuck behind bars, in these kangaroo courts. They were going on way back when. They're not just new today, maybe some people think they're brand new, but that's not the truth at all. So I was doing that, and Jerry was working. Where were you working at that time?
Well, I was working in the prison and I was seeing the
Yeah.
injustice of the system.
Yeah,
So
so.
Sherry had one of the biggest, what do you call it, prison websites in the US. So I think I contacted you and said, hey, I work in a prison. I see exactly what you're saying. And we ended up working together. Right?
Yeah, you wanted me to post your computer program that
Oh,
you and your wife
yeah.
wrote
Yep, my
to
cutting
help.
edge.
Yeah, that was a cutting edge thing, and it was like, so that was very inventive. And so we were working together to upload his program so that anybody could get it and download it for free. And so that's how we met. And then all of a sudden he starts talking about the work he's doing at the prison. And I'm listening. It's like, yeah, okay. I know that the prisoners can get a little wonky and they can get a little weird and all of that stuff. And so, Jerry was listening to telling me his stories, and then all of a sudden he said something about a particular patient who had said something very, very strange, and he thought that it had to do with the voices. And then that's when I came back saying, I know all about.
So this was 10 years that
Yeah.
we'd known each other for 10 years before she comes out and says that. So she's got all that behind the scenes that I didn't know about. Now, what she didn't know about at the time was that I had found these patterns that these voices were running, and what I had was groups of prisoners at the prison. Now, I got in trouble for this when I worked at the state hospital. When the psychiatrist found out I was asking patients about the voices and what the voices were saying, I ended up in the psychiatrist's office being threatened and told the voices are hallucinations. If you're asking questions about them, you're making the patients worse. You're reinforcing the hallucinations. I want you to stop it right now or you're going to be in trouble. Right? So that's what I was facing at the state hospital. So I had to kind of put it in, fly below the radar, really slow it down, and put it in first gear. What I was learning about the voices. But once I got to the prison, that's a whole different story. If one of the prisoners went to the warden and said, oh, the psych is asking me questions about the voices, I don't like it. I mean, they go, get out of my face, man. Go play in the traffic. Get out of here. It wouldn't even hit the level of where it would attract any attention. Where with the psychiatrist, they went ballistic. That happened twice to me while I was at that hospital. But at the prison, it was like, as long as nobody's acting out, and they were set up to deal with violence and abnormal violent behavior. So what I had was groups of patients or prisoners who had agreed to tell me in real time what their voices were telling them while we were in session. So it was like I had a window into their psychosis. Because a lot of them were just as curious about the voices as I was. They didn't know what they were. They were like, well, what are these things? Well, I don't know what they were. So we were kind of finding out together what they were. So I saw these patterns starting to emerge. The first one was they were consistently negative. They never deviated from that course. They were always negative. It was always, you're no good, you're ugly, you're stupid, you're rotten, nobody likes you, your wife's cheating on you, your girlfriend. It's always negative stuff. It never deviated from that. So here's the psychiatric mafia saying, well, they're hallucinations. Well, then what is holding them on that strict path? How come they're not positive, negative, neutral? How come they're not all over the place like regular hallucinations? They weren't. So my question was, what holds them on this path? Why are they consistently negative? What force holds them to that? I had no answer. The second one that came up was that they were anti-religious. They didn't like when the prisoners read the Bible, when they went to Bible study, when they went to church groups, they reacted to that very negatively. They got louder, they got more malicious, they would mock the preacher and say, Christ couldn't even save himself. What makes you think he would save you? So here's all these patterns starting to emerge, along with their energy disappearing when they're being attacked by these things. Third pattern. So here's one pattern after another pattern after another pattern after another pattern. So I started wondering, well, what would happen if I started interfering with these patterns? Right? So I started doing that, and I would give the prisoners who were hearing voices, I'd give them homework, and I'd say, do this, come back next week, tell me what happened. Right? So they did, and here's all this. After a while, they started coming back, and they're saying, the voices don't like this. They don't want us coming here. They don't want us doing these exercises. They think you're a jerk, And it was one after another, they were all saying the same thing. And I went, okay, so they don't like that. So when I found that they didn't like something, like they didn't like the 23rd Psalm, one fellow came to me, he said, when I pray the 23rd Psalm, the voices react like worms thrown on a hot frying pan. And I went, well, that's interesting. So I started handing out copies of the 23rd Psalm, say, well, use this when the voices come and then come back next week and tell me what happens. The voices consistently hated it. What kind of hallucination would hate religion? So here's these things that are not adding up based on what they taught me in graduate school and what everybody else at the hospital believed. So I started doing things to kind of interfere with these patterns. First, they came out and they said, we don't like this, don't go there, and they would give these guys a hard time all the way to my office. And then one guy came and said, after we were done a session, he turned around in my doorway and he said, you know what you're doing is dangerous, don't you? And I didn't think that. That never crossed my mind. I'm thinking, well, they're in your mind. They're not in my mind. You're stuck with them. I'm not. But he's just looked at me and then he turned around and walked away. I didn't say anything. I didn't know what to say. So I just filed it in the back of my mind, like I did all these other pieces that just didn't make any sense. There was all these pieces I was seeing that were very clear happening, but they didn't make any sense as far as a whole. So that one happened. And then the next one that happened is one of them came to my door. I don't know how he got into the medical unit. He knocks on my door and he says, the voices want to talk to you. And I'm like, they want to talk to me personally? He said, yeah, they want to talk to you personally. That had never happened before. It always happened the prisoner or the patient was the interpreter. The voices would talk to them, and the voices would tell them, he's a jerk, he's crazy, he's stupid, don't listen to him, that kind of stuff. And I'd respond back to the voices through the patient. Yeah, go tell them to stick their heads in the toilet or go play in the traffic or something like that. But it would all be through the patient. This wasn't the case. This was the first time, and there was like 20 years that never happened before. So I opened the door, let him in, and we sat down, and I'm like, okay, what do they have to say? And these words came out of his mouth. You have no right to interfere with our way of life. And my head just went boom, because
Oh, but
up to that point, I was in denial. I still didn't believe that these things were entities. At that point, after over 20 years, I believed it. My head just blew up. I mean, it was like I was in shock, And then I said, tell them this. And he responded, well, I don't have to tell them anything. They can hear you. They can see you. And I wasn't sure about that. And that took me back too. So I just went into shock. I mean, it was the first time that I fully realized that these things were entities. Prior to that, I'm going, ah, something's wrong with their subconscious mind, or there's something else going on, or I knew it wasn't a chemical imbalance, but I wasn't willing. I didn't want to believe that they were demons or entities. I mean, I just didn't want to believe it. But this was clear. You have no right to interfere with our way of life, plural. And then I looked at the prisoner, and he looks back and he goes, "It wasn't me. I didn't say that. That was them. Those weren't my words." And he wasn't lying. You can tell when they're lying. He wasn't lying. So I was in shock. I closed my office the rest of that day, and just stared out the window. So I didn't stop, and this went on for several more months. I kept working with these guys, and then I was always asking him questions. I mean, hundreds of questions. So I found this book called The Voice of Knowledge by Miguel Ruiz. He was a South American shaman. And here he is talking about these entities that drained the energy of the victim. And that's exactly what I was seeing with the schizophrenics. After the voices attacked, their energy went down to nothing. I mean, it was consistent. So I brought that in, and I was going to read it to this next prisoner. And I started reading it, and I was in my office. The door was closed, and I got to the part where this guy was talking about the energy disappearing, that these things were vampires. And I looked up, and I was going to ask him, "Well, what do you think?" And he's got this glazed look over his face, and he's just staring at me. And then all of a sudden, from behind my back, this loud electrical crackle broke out behind my head. It sounded just like an arc welder. And it was like crack, 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 crack. And then it starts moving to the right-hand wall. And then it starts crackling at a 45-degree angle up that right-hand wall. And I'm splitting my attention between him and trying to see what this crackling was. I mean, it sounded just like an arc welder, and it was loud. And it's moving up the right-hand wall at a 45-degree angle. And I look over at him and I say, "Do you hear that?" And he's just staring at me with this zombie look. So I push my chair back against the office wall. I'm thinking he's going to attack. Just in case he does, I could kick him back. And then I'm trying to see anything associated with this crackle. I couldn't see anything. I couldn't smell anything. I didn't feel anything. And it's just crackling up the wall. And then it starts crackling across the back office wall up at the ceiling. So at that point, I could see him, and I could kind of watch where that noise is coming from at the same time. And this went on for like 5 minutes. I mean, it wasn't short. Wasn't something you could just explain away as some anomaly. And then it starts crackling down the left-hand wall, and it's coming right toward me because I'm sitting near the left-hand wall, and I'm like, "What's going to happen now?" And I'm shocked. I mean, it's just none of this is making sense. And then it jumps into this Rubbermaid trash can right next to my left leg. And I bend over and I look in there, and there's nothing there. No papers, no nothing. The inmate porter had cleaned it the night before. It's completely empty. There's nothing I could see that's causing that crackling. And then boom, it just goes out like that. It just stops. And I look at him, and he slowly gets up and he goes, "I gotta leave." And he shuffles out of the office. I'm like, "Yeah, go, get out of here. Go, go." So after he left, I went and examined the walls. I didn't see any burn marks. I didn't see any evidence of anything that there was no evidence that anything had happened. So I go out into the hall and I look in the nurse's office. They're not in. The doctor's isn't in yet. Nobody's in the hallway. The only person in there is the guard at the beginning of the hallway, which is quite a ways off. There's no explanation for what I just experienced. And I'm like, again, totally shocked. I'm thinking, am I going insane? Am I going crazy? And I'm thinking, because what was it? Lang started getting a little crazy when he was studying schizophrenics. So I didn't have anybody I could talk to about any of this stuff. I couldn't tell my wife because she'd go, "You shouldn't be poking around in the heads of these psychotic, crazy people, prisoners anyway. Just stop doing it." And I couldn't tell the psych staff. I couldn't tell anybody. There's nobody I could talk to until I met Sherry. The only people that understood stuff like that were the schizophrenics themselves. I could talk to them about this kind of stuff, but nobody in the sane world. So I had one foot in this world and the other foot in this psychotic world, and I was straddled between the two, you know. And I was worried that I was starting to get crazy, that I was starting to lose my mind because of all this weird stuff that just kept happening. So when Sherry came along, she was the first sane person that I could talk to about this stuff. And it was such a relief.
I'll bet it will. I'll bet it will. It were a relief when I heard your work and when I read the book. To me, it meant that what I'd gone through was a real experience, not something I'd just imagined.
Oh no, well, no,
You
I
know,
don't, I didn't imagine it. It happened, and it was just otherworldly. I mean, it was like Outer Limits, that show Outer Limits, and do 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 do. You know, it's like, what is going on here? You know, where it was like, there was another fellow, Wilson Van Dusen, who was studying the voices in a state hospital up in northern Arizona or in, California, and I was kind of in touch with him. I think that was about the time that I was talking to Sherry, and he was making friends with the voices, seeing what he could learn from them by making friends with them. But they were such liars, he really got nothing out of them. But he did give a psychological test to, he was a clinical psychologist, so he gave psychological tests to the voices independent of the patient. So he'd get the patient, he'd say, I'm going to give you this test. I don't want you to let the voices make any marks on it. You take it yourself, and then I'm going to give that same test to the voices. And it was the MMPI he was given. And he scored them both up. They were both valid profiles, and the voices were much crazier than the patient.
No
Right.
surprise there, really.
Yeah, no surprise at all, actually. I mean, because they're the ones that start making the human be kind of crazy.
I
So.
just had a thought. Do you think, because I've met a handful in my existence. I mean, do you think people who tell compulsive lies have got an attachment? Because I don't mean people who tell a lie to get out of trouble, but you know, I'm sure we've all met someone who just tells
Yeah.
blatant
Constantly.
lies.
Yeah.
Because the reason I thought about it is because I met someone like that. I met a few people over the last 10 years, and this guy was so bad, and he was actually kind of a nice guy, but so bad at it. It was unbelievable. And you couldn't confront, you know, they were insane, these lies. And actually, I looked into it, you know, and it's part of, but they said there's no research on it. Why wouldn't someone be a compulsive liar? All they said was that it could be from a traumatic event or a literal knock on the head. But when you meet these people, and they're just, you know, they're just coming out with this stuff, and you kind of start to think that they believe it as well.
Well, you know that they're not quite right. And then you look at the voices and they're compulsive, you know, very compulsive liars. You can't believe anything they say. I had one patient where the voices told him, if you gouge out your eye, we will disappear and we won't ever come back. The guy did it. He actually gouged out his eye. And then the voices came back and started mocking him and saying, look how stupid you are. You listen to us. You know, you're dumb. You know, now you're a freak. Nobody will like you. You're going to be freaking everybody else out, and then you're ugly, and now you're like a cyclops. I mean, you know, they started mocking and making fun of them. That's what these things are like. They are
Well,
not
that's
nice.
an extreme example, of course, at the other end, and then the shorter end that Chris is talking about is like, what makes a person be a compulsive liar, right? So what I would want to know is, okay, what happened to you that makes you want to be compulsive? What makes you feel like you need to protect yourself from some kind of harm? Which is why people lie, because they think they're in trouble. So what, you know, like, what happened to make you think that everything is going to put you in trouble? And so you're trying to lie to get out of something that you don't even know what you got into, right? So I would say that that is the entity's lying to you.
Yeah. And
You know,
I've met people
stirred
who
up. So.
lie, they lie for no reason. They just
Yes.
lie to be lying.
That's what I was. That's kind of, I mean, because we've all told porkies to keep out of trouble, or
Or
to
just to
even,
say, I'm going to be an hour
or
late and you're 2 hours late,
yeah,
type of thing, yeah.
or even when you're younger to make yourself look a little bit better, maybe. But these people, it's like they're out of control.
Well, a
They
prime
just
example of that, Chris, is Boris
can't.
Johnson. A prime example in your face was Boris Johnson, who lied about from being a child to his first job. He got sacked for lying at the Times newspaper, and still was put in positions of so-called power. The more he lied, the more promotions he got, the more money
Biden
he earned.
Too.
Biden too, Trump
Biden
too,
too,
probably.
Compulsive liar.
it's almost become. I mean, it used to be a joke that politicians lied and schemed, but now they don't even hide it. It's just.
Well, I think a lot of them are they're possessed. I think a lot of them are possessed. They're just, you know, the money, the power, the sex, and that they just don't want to let go of it.
I watched a show the other day. I didn't mention it in our podcast, but I'll mention it to you guys. And I was watching, I won't mention what it is, but I was watching this conference thing going on. And I noticed two or three of the guys had bright yellow eyes, like sparkling yellow eyes. And I thought it was interesting, Fox. It looked unusual. Maybe it was a light, I don't know. But then I looked at the guys in the normal profiles, you know, and Googled them and looked at images. And they had bright blue eyes, both of them. But in this instance, there was three of them, actually. They had yellow, bright yellow eyes.
Lizard eyes.
Oh, yeah, they looked strange.
And
I took a picture of them, put them side by side. But then I thought, I don't know what I thought. I'd say what it reminded me of, Jared. You know those preachers you have in America, the crazy ones? What's his name? Stuart Copeland. You know those money-making evangelistic preachers?
Yeah, Al Sharpton.
Yeah, I saw him once, and his eyes went, I thought they'd gone yellow. It reminded me of that.
What are they called? Lizard people, the reptilians.
Reptilians, yeah. They do look like some kind of, I don't know, their eyes changed. I mean, that's all I can say, without a doubt.
I think a lot of this experimentation with the electronic type brain to voice to skull type is trying to tap into this type of experience or research that you guys have written about. Because it's like a it's it, this that's too controlled is that one. This is more, I wouldn't say natural, but an attack that you can't get away from. You can hear it knocking. You don't let it in.
You would hazard a guess that, like you were saying, like possession and stuff's existed for forever. Maybe they found out how to do it and weaponized it.
Yeah,
which
that's
is
more, better explained,
what would
yeah.
happen.
Yeah.
Now let's think about that for a minute, because that technology is technology, right? So it's running on a frequency of some kind that gets to the individual, that triggers whatever voice or whatever instructions or whatever. That does not mean that there's no frequency to nullify it, to neutralize it. So that, I mean, there probably is something like that already, but we just don't know about it. That's my guess. And so, because there's all kinds of stuff that, you know, the military has that we don't have, or we're not going to know until they're, you know, until it's already, you know,
20 years old.
then they'll give it to the public. And so, you know, that type of thing is probably what's happening now. They're just going to spoon.
I think it's safe to say that if Jerry's experienced this and found this out over 20, 30 years of his research, someone in high positions knows this is going on. They have to do. They know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hence why the psychiatrists won't talk about it. As soon as something can't be discussed and you're called crazy for even bringing it up, there's alarm bells everywhere, isn't there? You're on something, aren't you?
Yeah.
That's how they shut us up. They make us, first they make us care about what other people think about us. That's the main thing. Once we care about that, then, if they're going to call us a name, we're going to have to back off and not do that. We're going to self-discipline and, you know, imprison ourselves according to what they want us to do. Well, you know what? I've done enough of that already. I don't want to do that anymore.
And I dropped my license because I knew they would go after me. You know, they would come up with something and then they'd put it on my record. So I dropped it before I actually started speaking in public about this stuff. So they got nothing on me.
Yeah. Well, you've got yourself into a position where you can do that, Jerry, haven't you? That's what you've done. And you don't need the license anymore, do you?
No, I don't need the license. I got my own private practice dealing with a brand new energetic psychotherapy that's working great. It actually gets in there and it cures most psychological problems. It has a much harder time with schizophrenia. But there's been some people that the voices weren't very strong to where it did get rid of them. But with stronger voices, it has a hard time. Matter of fact, the voices actually attack and prevent the patient from doing what they need to do to benefit from that therapy. But for most people, it works for most people. It actually cures most psychological problems, depression, OCD,
Anxiety.
anger, anxiety, all that stuff. It actually gets rid of it. So it's not just treating symptoms like psychiatry does, where they pour drugs on your brain and they're just treating, suppressing the symptoms. It actually goes after the cause. So that's why they call it causism. And there's information about it on my website at jerrymarczynski.com. We did a couple of videos about it, if you
All
look
right.
through there.
Yeah.
But
Well,
I've
and
never seen anything as effective.
a person should probably look at the testimonies too of the patients,
Yeah,
because that's
there's.
impressive. I mean, I don't know that there's a regular tab on Jerry's website saying testimonials or something like that. So if they click on that, there's like, I think there's I forget how many now, but there's quite a few already. And Jerry gets them and then he sends them to me when it's one that belongs on the website. He doesn't put all of them on there, but he'll put certain ones on there that hit certain points that other people didn't, when they were writing reviews. So there's not a whole bunch of there's some redundancy there, but all of it is like, this is great. That's redundant as can be. But so there's a whole bunch of different testimonials there. If any of your listeners want to go to Jerry's website and click that tab and just read on through,
Yeah, I love that.
I've never seen anything work like this. It's a energetic psychotherapy. So, your thoughts are energy, your memory is energy, your mind is energy, your spirit is energy. I mean, it's all energy, your memory is energy. So it goes in there and it goes into the subconscious mind and actually removes and dispels trauma. And there's a spiritual component to it also. And it doesn't work without that spiritual component, but the client doesn't even have to know about that. You set up the structure, and it's the spirit that does the last stage automatically, because energy flows from negative to positive.
Sounds very intriguing, that
I was fascinated with when I saw it. I said, "This guy is onto something." So I went and got certified in it. It took a while, but I've never seen anything work like it. Nothing. I mean,
Wow.
and I've been at this for 40 years. I've gone through all kinds of in-service training. Regular counseling bounces off of schizophrenics like BBs off of the butt of a rhino. I mean, it doesn't work.
Is there a name for this therapy, Jerry?
It's called the MACE energy method. It was invented by John MACE, who wasn't a psychiatrist or a psychologist or a social worker. He was a ship captain. He drove these big freighters back and forth across the ocean, but he was brilliant. And he always wanted to figure out how the mind worked. So he had to know about magnetism. He had to know about the flow of electricity. He knew that energy flows from negative to positive, which was a big thing because these negative identities, this negative energy that's stuck in the subconscious, will flow to the positive if a bridge is built for it to do that.
Yeah,
And that's kind of what MACE does.
there's something metaphorical about a ship's captain taking a cargo around the world on energy.
Yeah.
There has to be.
Yeah.
I was going to say, isn't it funny, right? You go to see a psychiatrist and say you're not feeling very well, or you feel mentally unstable or whatever, and then he convinces you, and babe, it's because the world's insane, isn't it? And then he convinces you the world's fine. It's you. You're the problem.
Yeah.
Now take all these drugs. And
Yeah.
maybe you can
Take all these drugs.
balance up with the rest of the world and just get on with it and stop complaining. You'll be fine.
Yeah, that's it. You're
Welcome to
not going to
clown
visit.
world. Yeah.
You're not going to visit a psychiatrist, complain about anything, and not come out of there without some prescription for some toxic drug.
Horrible. So
Well,
how do you spell MACE energy method? Sorry, Dom.
yeah.
Is it MACE, right?
MACE,
Yeah, MACE is in MACE.
MACE energy method.
Yeah.
And the website is causismInstitute.com. And they call it causism because it gets at the cause of the mental disorder.
All right.
Where psychiatry and psychology really don't. They just, the best they do is just talk it over and over and over and beat it to death. It may work eventually. This is quick, within an hour. And I see it over and over again, these people that are, 70, 80 years old, something happened to them when they were a kid. And they came to a decision that I'm worthless because this thing happened to me. And they went through their entire life believing they were worthless until we ran the mace thing on them. And then that was gone.
I was going to say, actually, when Sherry told that story about the bath, just imagine, I was thinking it, that incident, if it had followed through what the voices were telling you to do, it'd have just destroyed both your lives, because the kid had been traumatized, you'd have been traumatized, and probably not sat here talking about it now, because you'd have probably traumatized you so much.
Yeah, I probably would have, and I probably wouldn't be me, that's for sure. And that little girl wouldn't be her.
No.
Yeah.
Do you think you were targeted, Sherry? Like Jerry was saying, that you're the most spiritual person he's ever met. Do you think that's why you were an enemy to the dark entities?
I have thought
Good
about that
point,
a
man.
lot, and I've thought, I wonder if that's true. I mean, I need to be humble enough to realize that all of us are the same energy, and we're all the same kind of
Yeah.
spiritualness.
But I have to believe your path was maybe
Yeah. So,
put through that to meet Jerry, and then now you've talking about someone that no one else talks about ever. Do you
Well,
know?
that's true. Yeah, that's true.
You've definitely lifted a veil on this stuff
Well,
that
I'll
no one
tell you,
else has done. Yeah.
Sherry's been like my right hand woman the whole time.
Yeah.
I mean, if it
Yeah.
wasn't for her, I wouldn't be where I am now. This book would look very, it would probably have gotten out, but it would be very different. It wouldn't be anywhere near as good as it is.
So made a real partnership doing that book.
And we're still partners. I mean, I'm still, we're still working together.
Yeah, I can tell. I can tell you are. Where can, just remind people where they can find your stuff, Jerry. I'm conscious that we're going over the hour and 10:15 mark now.
Well, you can go to jerrymarzynski.com, and there you'll find a section on mace, and there will be a number of videotapes with people like Sherry who have experienced these things and were willing to talk about it. And those kind of people are hard to find because of the stigma with schizophrenia. They don't want to talk about it.
I also think, Jerry, when you've been through something like that, you want to put it behind you. You don't necessarily want to talk about it either, in case it maybe there's a fear that it's going to stir it back up, and maybe bring it back out again when people have sort of got over it. Whatever. There are other reasons that people don't. How do you explain it as well? What can you say? I mean, the stories that Sherry there, I mean, I experienced not the same exact stories, but similar stories. How do you explain that? She'd got no hurt for that young child. She didn't want to hurt that child. There's no explanation, is there?
Well, other than the entities,
Yeah, other than the entities. Yeah.
and
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
those things are like, they're like sharks in the ocean smelling blood. So they go after people who've been severely psychologically, sexually, or emotionally abused. They also go after meth addicts. Meth just opens people up. Like, I mean, they just walk right in. They go after people using Ouija boards. I had one lady write me. She said she was using a pendulum, and they got into her via a pendulum. It's the first time I ever heard that. But in the prison, the meth addicts would say that when they ran out of meth, the voices would tell them where to go and when to be there, and they would always find meth there. I
Which
mean,
tells you
I've
that's
heard
even.
that over and over and over again. They know stuff that we normally don't.
That's an even bigger picture, isn't it? When you put that into the equation, that they know, or basically they can tell the future or control the future, because they're controlling other people to get into certain positions.
Yes. Yep. They will manipulate other people also. I mean,
And
so they're.
so we come to another part where all these, I'll use politics, go back to politicians again. I mean, a lot of my research is about bloodlines. The ancient bloodlines, how they all seem to align constantly, generationally, over and over and over again, which says to me that possibly these people are easily tapped into as well and controlled
I
and
think they
suggested that.
are. They're in a network, right? They're in a network of sorts that whatever they communicate directly with each other. In other words, they don't have to go fly somewhere or anything like that. They just communicate with one another through their invisible network.
Yeah. It's like a sort of biological AI communication system.
Something like that, only
Yeah.
probably a whole lot quicker.
Yeah, like an instant one. Yeah, just like, yeah. I
Instantly.
remember when we were in between shows talking to you last time, Jenna, and by chance I was reading something about auras, and it was saying something to do with crack addicts, saying that I remember I brought this up with you at the time, and it said that it put a chink in their aura. And I thought it was interesting. It said it literally put gaps in people's aura. And I remember saying to you, maybe that's how they, hence, something we don't really
They jump
understand.
right in there, you
Jump,
know,
jump.
and the way the meth addict experiences it is they start hearing voices while they're high, you know, so they like that feeling of being, you know, all powerful in the meth, and they start hearing voices and they go, oh, that's just a hallucination, it'll go away, and it does. And it may go away 10 times, 20 times, 50 times, it may go away. And then one day it doesn't. And they're stuck with it for the rest of their lives. They're just as psychotic as any of the people in the psych hospital. And it doesn't go away and it doesn't leave easily. I'd say the prison is full of those kind of people who were using meth and went psychotic on meth. The prisoners called it the devil's door.
Yeah. And then you think about who's releasing this like meth into society.
Yeah, and into
Obviously,
the prisons.
to get them in prison in the first place, or who's making it in a pharmaceutical company in the first place to insert it into society, they must have attachments to them to be controlling them to do something like that. And yeah, it's just
Oh
a.
yeah, they're giving it to young kids. I mean, Adderall, Ritalin, that's amphetamine.
Yeah.
They're giving the kids. I remember talking to one prisoner who was locked up because he committed crimes on meth, and he started out as a kid using Ritalin. And I said, well, you were feeling good with the Ritalin. I mean, you were level, you were stable. Why did you keep going? He says, I don't know.
You know, we kind of worked with that, all of that stuff that you were just talking about, Dom, with the pharmaceuticals and the prisons, and then getting people hooked on drugs so they will go to prison. And so when we were working with the prison reform group, we came across all kinds of data that showed us this big plot that, you know, we tried to get it out in the public and nobody wanted to listen. You know, it was a whole thing of we had the I remember when they first went to private prisons because that was a prison for profit, and I kept saying
It was awful.
it was horrible. And you know, these guys were not being taken care of. I mean, I know they committed a crime, but my God, it doesn't mean you
No,
have to torture them, right? So
I've seen that happen. They could care less about the prisoner. It was money that made, that's why they run the money. They don't give any programs. They don't do anything for the prisoners. They just house them like a warehouse.
I would say as well, going back to money, I mean, we're in business, and I've seen people react in similar ways of being possessed with money. They would sell their own. That's why I go out with that type of business, because they would basically step on their own grandma to earn money. And that's a similar kind of possession. So, like Sherry was saying, we're attacked from so many different angles that we don't even know sometimes.
Hey, sure. Tell them about the when you were sending doing Reiki and you were sending positive energy into the Alabama prison. Tell them that story.
Yeah, we'll
Dude,
finish on a positive note,
that's a,
eh?
it's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah. All right, an interesting note.
It'll be a positive note after, you know, we really got the guys mad. We really got them angry at us. We were studying Reiki. I know if you are you familiar with
Yes.
Reiki?
Yeah.
Okay, so what we were doing, we had five Reiki individuals that were scattered around the world. And so we would set up a particular time and we wanted to do this experiment. We wanted to send loving energy into the prisons and see what happened. We wanted to do just loving energy, you know, that's all we wanted to do, see what would happen. And so we would have somebody on the inside. They would know that we were going to do this. And so we would do this for a particular time, maybe 2, 3 hours. And then we have to wait for them to write us back and tell us what happened. And in every case, There was some improvement of some kind. Either the guards got more polite, the fights lessened down. There were noticeable difference. The inmates were getting along better with each other. The food was, tasting a little bit better. There was all kinds of positive things that was going on for us, just sending Reiki energy to the particular prison of choice. So on this particular night, we had the Alabama prison was selected. That's the one we wanted to work on. We had worked on it once before and it had some really good results. So we wanted to do it again, right? So we had it all set up. And the way I was working at the time. So I was kind of traveling all over the country. And so I was staying in this apartment in, I think it was Indiana. But anyway, so I was unfamiliar with everything in the apartment, but I had the computer set up and I had the lights turned down and I had the candles lit and so on to set the ambiance. And so to do Reiki. And so then we started doing that. And then all of a sudden the computer went out, the lights, the electricity went off. And in front of me in the kitchen, it was really dark in there, except for the candles. And they were there was this dark smoke. It was darker than the dark. And it was kind of going around like in a kind of a tornado configuration, with a stem down kind of moving toward me. And I thought, oh, what's this? I was kind of, like, what the hell? And so there was nobody I could contact because I was by myself. All the electricity was gone. I didn't know what to do. And then it dawned on me, oh, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait, I know what this is. I know what this is. And so I have to, get my strength up. And so the message coming from that entity was, I forget the whole word, but it was like, those prisons are mine. Those prisons are mine. And I said, no, they're not. No, they're not. And he's like, this entity, I keep saying he because it felt like a he. I wish I could remember the whole scenery word for word, but because it was so tense, it's like, no, you're not. And he's like, who do you think you are? I'm like, what the hell? What do I think? Who do I think I am? And I'm like, well, I think I'm a child of God, and I think you're not, and so I think you're lying. And I was going on with all this stuff that I knew that wouldn't work on me, but might work on him. And so he went away, and I'm like, oh God, what the hell was that? That was my first experience with something physical that had to do with that. Prior to that, it was all in my head and my emotions. And so then I was like, oh God, what was that? And then I'm sitting on the floor and I'm leaning up against the couch, and then all of a sudden here it comes again. Just and it came up so close to me, and I'm like, okay, I am love. I radiate love. I love and I am loved. And it vanished. But before I did that, I laughed because the whole thing reminded me of a Monty Python skit. And I started laughing my ass off. I started really laughing hard. And that made it back off. And then I went to this, I am love thing and it disappeared. And then the lights came back on, the computer came back on. I got in touch with everybody, the group, and I t told them what happened. And they're like, oh, wow. So we must be having a good effect. So, the energy giving, sending energy to a particular place has a lot of effect, whether we know it or not.
Well,
So.
certainly the ancients, the people in charge of this place, think it does. Otherwise, they wouldn't put obelisks on ley lines and whatever, as we've been
So
talking about Chris recently.
here's like five, ordinary people who happen to study Reiki and happen to, want to have an effect on our prison system, just trying out some experiments and seeing what happens, and they do work.
When you talk about Reiki like that, sure, it's the same as a prayer, isn't it? It's
It
virtually
is. It
you're
is.
using your mind for intent. positive
Exactly.
intent.
And at the time, I was thinking Reiki, but it's more than that. It's the whole energy thing. It's what you're thinking, it's what you're feeling. So if you're praying, and if you have a group of people praying with the same intent, I think that force is increased.
Now, I've heard of two other incidents very similar to that. And one of them is on the website under videos. Go look for one called Anonymous. He had a very dramatic story where they came and they visited him. And it was matter of fact, he found out that there was the entity he saw. I think he called it Abraxas. It existed in Roman times 2-3 thousand years ago. He didn't know that at the time he saw it. He found that out later, but it was the exact same thing that he saw that
Oh, wow.
came and scared the bejesus out of him.
Good
But
deal.
yeah, it's anonymous, I think it is.
But I mean, one thing we can't, we I think we can say is that these things aren't really scary. Not, I'm not
I
saying
don't
they are
know. I
visualize
would
it.
have
No,
told them if I know
but
Jenna.
in reality, they unless you allow them, they can't do shit to you.
Well, they
That's
scared the
true.
dead bejesus out of me.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it doesn't scare you, but they can't. It might stress you out and all that. But in reality, in our reality, they've got to try and control you to get you to do things remotely. Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh.
I've watched
That's how they work.
prisoners. I watched prisoners who had scratches on their back, four fingers right across their back. They could not have done that to themselves. And if somebody else did it to them, they would probably have a black eye or that would start a fight.
Yeah,
So they actually can cause physiological damage.
I'm more thinking about everyday people say listen to this, not necessarily. I would say prisoners are probably another stage away from what I experienced. Or, I mean, the way I got around my stuff is by acknowledging them, just saying hello. I know it sounds like everything. It sounds crazy, but
Oh,
just
and
by acknowledging.
you didn't show him any fear.
Yeah, just by acknowledging what was
Yeah,
going on, that I know you're not real.
right. And
I
what
know
you
it's not
did
me.
is you split them.
Sorry, I
That's
know you're
right.
real.
That that's very important to split them off from you, to realize that they're not you. Because as long as you think they're you, which is what psychiatry is telling you, you're never going to get rid of them. There's no chance. There's no chance because, like you said, it was like a autoimmune disease. You know,
I
you're
have actually
fighting
tried it
yourself.
on people who are suffering from anxiety. Just close your eyes and acknowledge that you know that these people aren't you, or these people not necessarily real. It's not my reality.
Those thoughts are not yours.
And it's works with them as well. Works with other people who've
It
got
does
anxiety.
work on a smaller level, because I've done what you said when you hear these intrusive things, they're not necessarily positive. I'm not saying they're the voices, but you just said, "Shut up, I'm not listening to
Yeah, you don't have to let
You're a
them in.
liar. You're a liar. I know what you're up
Right.
to." And it does work. It does work on a
Yes. Yes, sir.
psychological level,
It
even.
does. It absolutely does
Go,
hurt.
it
It does.
away. It goes away, doesn't it? I'm not listening to
And
this
I don't want
crap.
people to go away with that. That's what I'm meaning by it's not that they're not scary. That there is solutions to this. You've got to put time and effort in, though. You can't just expect it to happen.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, with the if anybody goes to Jerry's website or mine, they can find that that's a live program if they want to read it. And then in that write-up, it explains that this is not an overnight fix. You know, this has been with you since you were however long you've had this thing. Could have been since birth, or it could have just been a few years, or it could have been just this year, whatever it is. But if you want to get rid of it, you have to realize how long it took for you to get to this point right now that you need to get rid of it. If it's never been a big deal, you're not going to have a problem anyway. But if you have a problem and you've tried to get rid of it and you don't know what to do about it, go read that article. It'll explain. But this is something you have to do diligently,
Consistently, yeah.
consistently. So, I mean, it's something it you can't just say, oh, well, that's a lie and then be done with it. It doesn't work that
No,
way. Yeah,
no.
the other thing you got to realize that not all thoughts that enter your mind belong to you.
Yes.
Emanuel Swedenborg says, none of your thoughts are your own. They either come from heaven or they come from hell. You are the chooser. You're like the radio station. You know, you tune to the frequency of those thoughts.
Well, so, I remember writing, before me and Chris started doing podcasts, I did these short videos. I remember writing saying thought is the biggest killer, because thoughts generally aren't your own.
Yeah, you look at what's happened in the United States. 50,000 people a year commit suicide in the United States. A good many of them are on some kind of psychiatric drug, right? And they're still killing themselves. So what is it that's telling them to kill themselves?
Yeah, well,
where do
again,
those thoughts come from? They don't belong to the innate
no.
human being. They just, you know, people aren't, one of the biggest things about people is they want to survive. It's one of the
yes.
strongest, what do you
it
call
is the
it?
thing, isn't it?
Instincts.
It's, yes,
Yeah. It's
yeah.
the strongest instinct you got. What is it that overrides that and tells these people to kill themselves? Where do those thoughts come from?
Yeah.
That's as many as were killed in the
Vietnam War.
Vietnam War.
58,000 in the UK, in the US, yeah.
And it's year after year after year after year. It doesn't get less. It's growing
no.
more. And
yeah.
the big pharma is earning 14 point something billion dollars selling antipsychotic drugs, and close to 15 billion, not million, billion dollars selling antidepressants. They don't care if anybody gets better. They want them to just keep taking the meds.
I'd say they don't want anybody to get better, do they? They just
No.
The business of illness is how they earn
Yes.
their money.
Yep.
No,
going sick or dead.
Security is a lost customer as far as they're concerned.
Yes. Yeah. Too right. And just going back to that about thought, I mean, thought, anything that isn't natural, like you need to go to the toilet or you want something to eat or drink or you're breathing, whatever. I mean, you don't breathe without thought, actually. But anything other than that natural, than those natural bodily functions is an intrusive thought in a way, because you don't need to buy that next whatever, you don't need that new whatever, you know. These are things that you've been pre-programmed to think about, which probably opens a door to these entities, to be fair.
Yeah, physical reality is a huge distraction from spirit.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, but it probably trains you to that these thoughts are, you know, you watch an advert and you go buy something. People don't realize that that is probably training you to take notice of the entities as well. but yeah. What's your website, Sherry, for people to go on as well?
My website is keyholejourney.com.
So that's jerrymazinski.com and keyholejourney.com.
Yes.
All the details will be in the show notes if people want to go on the website.
I would say, and not to plug your book, but if anyone's
I'm plugging the book.
If anyone's experiencing any of this, it's a good start in it, because you often feel alone with this kind of stuff, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So, an amazing journey into the psychotic mind. I've read it. I want to reread it again. I read it when we first met, but I'll give it another read.
A lot has changed since we wrote that. I mean, it's a lot of it has evolved since we wrote that book, but it's still a good start.
Yeah.
I don't know that we want to write a sequel. Do we, Jerry? I don't think we
You know,
want
it'd be nice to be able to add to it.
Yeah.
You know,
just A revised edition,
yeah. maybe, yeah.
yeah.
An update.
And,
yeah.
And instead of writing a whole new thing, because we know a lot more now than we did when we wrote this book.
Right,
yeah.
But it's a good introduction into it. I mean, because there will be people who are thinking, you know, maybe at the beginning of this thought, this is crazy talk. By the end, thinking, actually, I'm having a bit of that.
yeah.
And, you know, need a little dip into it.
Well, ironically, the thoughts will talk you out that you're actually having the thoughts, which is another. They'll reverse the actual fact to say it's real. But
go full cycle.
Full circle, yeah. Okay, then.
I had one schizophrenic guy that wrote me. He says, well, now that I know they're not me, I got this. And that's all he said.
Well, that might be all it takes. Yeah, it might be all it takes for someone.
That's all it took for him, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're going to come back on in a couple of months or so, Jerry, with a couple of guests who we sort out, possibly. I think.
Yeah, I can arrange that.
Yeah. We'll set something up with that. And it's really nice to see you again, Sherry.
Yes, it's really nice to see you too, Dom and Chris.
Yeah, nice to see you guys.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's been good.
mutual.
You know, every time I get something new out of these conversations as well. That's and I think it's been great having both of you on. You don't really do sort of podcasts together that much, do
No, you got to drag Sherry out. Yeah,
you?
she's got to almost get a personal invitation, otherwise she's kind of stays back in the back room there.
Fair
Well,
enough. I'm glad we dragged her out anyway.
I think that's called a projector, isn't that in Human by Design or something? That's a projector. Person has to be invited to.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. But anyway,
I
well,
think
I did you lots of times, and you turned it down. You turned it down so many times, I stopped inviting you.
Yeah,
it's these English accents, I think. That's where it is, Jerry.
Was that what it is?
Yeah, I think so.
That's what. She's attracted to the English accent.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but these
Well, there was something about the vibe in the question that when you sent the email, I said, "Oh yeah, that's what I want to do that. Yeah, that
yeah,
sounds good."
right. All right, well, there you go. So maybe I asked the right question, Jerry.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it
but
worked.
it's been great catching up. And yeah, thanks for everybody for joining us tonight. I hope you or today even. I hope you've got something out of this. We certainly do every time we chat about these subjects, because there is something bigger than what we're doing here. It's not all about going to the supermarket and listening to politics on the television or watching politics on the television. There has to be something bigger than what we're experiencing, and there has to be.
I totally agree
There
with
is.
that.
Yeah. And that's it.
Some positive,
Okay.
some negative.
Yeah. Some yeah. Thanks for tuning in. See you next time. Bye.
Right.
Young, be